Welcome to Takeoff, a podcast where we dive into the trends and technology shaping the future of aviation and automotive. I'm your host, Neil Houston, Vice President of Public Relations and Communications at Arrigo. And today I'm joined by our Chief Technology Officer, Simon Brewerton. Thanks for joining.
Thank you, Neil.
I will say you have been the coveted guest that I have wanted since we started this podcast. The CTO is probably the most elusive job of all, and everybody is vying for your time. Right. So we had to actually get you all the way here to Ottawa, Canada. We brought you over the pond because we, of course, have a really exciting launch of our first left-hand drive North American auto shuttle. So tell me about what that has taken to get from the UK and move that technology right here.
We have a few more of these same kind of vehicles over in the UK. As you say, this is the first left-hand drive. So all the ones that we have in the UK, obviously right-hand drive, other side of the street. So, but also the vans are built out differently. So they have, this is the electric transit, an e-transit. So it has all its powertrain and brake pedals and boosters and everything. Some of that stuff swaps sides when you build it for left-hand, right-hand drive, and some of it doesn't. Mm-hmm. So when you have to build all of the electrical controls and architecture that go into this thing to turn it from a manually driven thing into a drive-by-wire thing that computers can then control, you have to build all that stuff out, right? So there's the compute box brain of it, but there's also turning a regular van into something that a computer can control. So it's like two layers of that interfacing needed.
And we're one of the few companies that has that automotive background as well as that autonomous piece to really make it all blend seamlessly, of course. And that's all coming mainly from your brain to the brain of the vehicle that we like to call our autonomous drive system, or AutoStack.
Yeah, so the AutoStack, as you say, is a big brain that drives all this stuff. It makes the decisions. It has to work out where the vehicle is. It has to then work out where you want to go and plan a route to get to that place. And then it also has to be able to see any threats or any other objects along the way to be able to drive safely. It needs to know the rules of the road in whatever jurisdiction it's running. So not quite the same for Canada as it is in the UK or any of the other places. You know, we run in Singapore, we run in, you know, North America, other places as well. So, so there's a whole load of personalizing the driving profile to meet the particular set of rules. Mm-hmm. And there's also, you know, just the physical stuff. There are different lighting requirements. There are different like uses of a horn. There are different things on the roadways, whether you yield to people at a crosswalk or not, and, you know, different traffic lights and traffic light colors and sequences and many nuances of running from one country's rules to another country's rules.
Exactly.
And as part of that, we have to do a lot of testing, validation. I mean, I've been over here a few weeks now. We've been over at the Area X.O facility over on the other side here at Ottawa, and testing with those guys. So they have a, you know, a private area, which is effectively a testing ground. But it has like your Canadian traffic lights hanging.
Yeah, yeah.
It has the little dummies on the skateboards that you can use for the threat detection and the emergency stop testing and this kind of thing. But it also has a goose on a skateboard.
You would never test that in the UK.
I've absolutely never seen that before. I mean, obviously there are a lot of what we would call them Canadian geese from the Brits.
Yes.
But obviously you call them geese.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
So we have a Canada goose on a skateboard and it gets run out in front of our van. We have to detect it and then obviously stop gracefully and not hit it.
And not, of course, a fun recreational skateboard, just a board that moves across looking
absolutely
like a skateboard.
So this is like a robot base.
Crazy.
It's actually a very expensive piece of kit.
Yes.
It's a robot base. You can program that thing to launch at a certain speed and profile, certain headway between us and where the thing is. So you can do all these like back-to-back-to-back experiments. And then you can do it actually and sign it off as like a legally approved thing. And there's always something new to learn.
How do we make our auto shuttle work?
Yeah, so as I said, the vehicle needs to know where it is. And for us, we run in a constrained area, a few square kilometers normally of operating space. And before we run any vehicle autonomously in that space, we manually drive the vehicle or a rig, sometimes a mapping rig, sometimes just a real vehicle, depends what we have at the time. That thing has got all the sensing equipment on it to be able to record what it sees, and what I mean sees, what it senses. So we have infrared scanners and cameras. We have regular color cameras. We have GPS systems. We have a thing called an inertial measurement unit. So then using other sensors and fusing all that data together, you can then correct for those inaccuracies. We have a whole sensor suite here that we're fusing together. So the whole thing about being able to successfully drive especially in like a street environment like this, rather than like indoors in a warehouse or something that's very well controlled. We obviously have a very harsh climate here, very hot in the summer, extremely cold and snowy in the winter.
Live and breathe.
Yeah, you need to have sensors that have different physical properties. So that there's not even just an overlap in like the field of view of stuff, but you're measuring stuff with different physics. So is it using light as a camera system? Is it using projected laser beams, you know, as the, the LIDARs that we have running on here? Is it using like a radar or a camera, or is it using the inertial measurement system? Is it using like just regular GPS? We have sensors on all these wheels, so we can work out how far we've rolled through the space on our wheel counters. And because the wheels at the front are steering, if you go around the corner, the one on the outside actually goes faster than the one on the inside. You can build a little computer program, work that out, and it can model exactly where that path is on the floor as it drives around.
It's all of these pieces to the puzzle. And sometimes we have, you know, one that's more in the lead, just like a race, right? Which one has higher quality data coming in? And then what is the best for the situation that we're in?
That's exactly like the recipe of how you're blending all these things together. You have all these different pieces of data. Each one of them has a certain precision and it has a certain quality of its knowledge of how good it's performing. So by looking at the data and the reliability of the data and a metric of the data, which is included with those datas, you can fuse them together and you do make that decision actively as the thing's running along. So, you know, at some point in time, maybe you have like a GPS that's dropping out. So you ignore that because you can run on the rest of your sensor suite quite happily. There might be other areas where you're like in a completely open zone, like in the middle of an airfield, for instance. There isn't anything really for a camera and a laser scanner to see, apart from a few road markings, so we can find those. But otherwise, they've got nothing to see, so you're running a little more heavily on a GPS system in those environments. So we make those decisions with the driving logic that's running on this vehicle. That happens at a 20 times a second rate on this particular vehicle. So 20 times a second, it's doing like the full 360 snapshot of everything that's happening. It's looking at that data, deciding what in that view is effectively stationary in the scene and what is a possible threat. Other things moving, other vehicles moving,
falling, you know, leaves
flying around that you have to filter out. Heavy snow, when the snowflakes are coming down, you've got to be able to filter those out. Heavy rain, you know, the raindrops coming down, it sees all of that. You get rain on your sensors. And it's a bit like looking like through some little, you know, mirror lens, and everything looks a bit distorted because of that, you know. So we have technologies that have to clean all that stuff up, filter out everything that's going on, understand exactly the confidence you have in every one of those different pieces of information and fuse them together. And then with that, you get many different overlapping views of the same thing, which is fantastic. So you're never looking at one single point failure of something. You have multiple sets of software running on multiple compute bases, looking at multiple sets of sensors, and they can come up with a consensus of a decision. And then you can vote together. We basically, that's what we do. We vote together and we decide exactly this is the ground truth that we're going to be running from at this moment in time.
This vehicle needs to know and see it all.
Yeah, so it has to know exactly where it is in the world. That's the first thing. Like, you've got to localize where you are and know exactly where you are. And that's a pose. We call that a pose. Strike a pose. So it's a pose. It basically is a, like an XYZ position in space and then a roll pitch yaw. And you're doing that as you roll through the world. So then you plan a route. And you do that on a big scale first. So like you, it's a bit like looking at the old school road atlas. You go, oh, I want to go from this place to this place. That means down that street over there, and then boom, end up over there, right? So that's like the global view of the world. And then you do a local view of the world is like, I'm actually on this street now. I want to be in this lane and I want to be navigating in this lane. I'm looking out for the other things. Maybe there's a parked car. Maybe there's like a pedestrian crossing coming up. You have to plan a little local plan of how you get around. So you've got someone in the background doing the global view of the world, and then we've got a little local, very fast little plan that runs as we're driving down the street. On top of that system, you then run basically a threat detection management system, and that's looking to find all of the things in the scene that are possibly moving, or possibly they're in known locations where you know threats will come from. So the nice thing about running in these kind of routes, this vehicle is running on around a 5 kilometer route around this tech park here in Ottawa. We've already been through every single interchange, junction, crosswalk, everything is absolutely known already to us and therefore to this compute system. it already knows exactly where every stop line is. It's not calculating any of that stuff on the fly to second guess it. It has a baseline, and all it's doing is verifying that its view of the world is equivalent to the baseline.
Yes.
And then it validates, yeah, I should be whatever, you know, 200 feet from this next stop line. And sure enough, as we come up 200 feet, there's a stop line.
Yes.
Okay, all jives together.
Exactly.
And you have a plausibility. So it's a way of making it that you have a very robust system with a lightweight computing.
Right.
So we keep things very physics-based, and we do it in a very explainable way. And because of that, we have a very lightweight code structure. And because it's lightweight, you can also prove that it has robustness and resilience. You can simulate all that nice stuff as well as doing it on the stream. And then you end up with a platform that can run on a compute system that you can afford.
You know, let's actually get down to the tech. We talked about this moving around and what the obstacles, you know, coming in and out. So, you know, on this vehicle in particular, we have broken it down into a very easy set of numbers, 8 LiDARs and 8 cameras. So let's just do a brief kind of overview and take people through what that looks like as we do a walk around.
Absolutely. So at the top here, we have a drum right at the top there. That drum is a laser scanner, but it's a mechanical laser scanner. So effectively what that thing has in it is a big laser beam, infrared laser beam in the bottom of it. And then it has a 45 degree set rotating mirror that spins around. And you can think of it a bit like having a whole cluster of laser pointers all gathered together, making all these parallel laser beams that are going out into space. And then because the mirror is spinning, it spins them around like a lighthouse. So imagine all these laser beams coming out at a certain different angle from each other, a few degrees from each other. That spins around, mapping through the world. And each one of those beams, whatever it hits, it tells me the reflectivity, so how much energy was absorbed. So basically the color, but in the infrared spectrum. So it's like how black and white color it was. And it also tells me how far away it is. And it does that by like the time of flight of the light bouncing off the thing and getting received back again.
Okay.
So the cool things about these is that they bring the light with them. So they work just as well in the day as in the nighttime. So it's you know, it's illuminating the world with its spinning laser beams like a lighthouse panning around.
I've never actually heard somebody talk to a rotating LiDAR like a lighthouse. It's such a great way to compare and really explain what it looks like, and you can visualize that.
Yeah, and I guess you can also kind of visualize that a lighthouse only has a beam and that's spinning around. It doesn't like illuminate everything all at once, right? So this is exactly the same. It's spinning 20 times a second here, painting the world. But if you were to run fast enough, it's a bit like when you do those panoramic views with your phone.
Yes,
you can actually move in the scene before it's got back to you again.
I love that.
Right? So so that's the same thing we have to hear. We also have to take into account that on one side it's painting the world in one direction, on the other side it's painting the world in the other direction.
Okay.
So things are moving in the scene, like we're moving through the scene. Part of the scene looks like it's slowing down. The other part looks like it's sped up.
Yeah.
Underneath it, we have that little bulge on the bottom. That's a color camera. So that's a camera that actually has a very good depth of resolution. So it can also see in the dark. So we can use that for basically doing any kind of threat detection, but also for following the lines and, and for doing any other kind of like, we call it odometry. So you can, as you drive through the world, you as a human drive through, you know, a lane in the world, and you've got your little white line or yellow line markers down the center of the road that are whizzing by. The faster you drive, the faster those go whizzing by. So if the camera's looking for those, it can tell me as well an approximation at least of how fast the vehicle is going. So now I've got yet another set of data to compare with my road. Wheels are telling me how fast I'm going, and the motor of the vehicle is telling me how fast I'm going. So I have all these other points of view of the same thing to know that everything is really properly working.
We can go around this way, perhaps?
Sure, so both sides of the vehicle are effectively the same on this one, except that we have, of course, our very large access door here for the electric ramp. So we can put a wheelchair user in here, and it has a lovely electric lamp. Put them into at level height, so we can do a level curb access. So this is not an autonomous thing, actually. this is a, you know, a manually driven thing, and we have our crew in the vehicle here that obviously trained to operate this. And then it's an approved lift, certified and so on, that you need for when you go to these kind of places.
You know, speaking of that, of this not being autonomous, whenever people say, is this a level five? You know, oftentimes people don't know the levels, right? I always say one of the biggest differences between a level four and a level five is level five is full autonomy. That does not include us opening this up and then securing the wheelchair once it gets inside. So there's a lot more that has to happen, you know, in the world for us to move through from L4 to L5.
Yeah, and I guess all of these kind of vehicles at this stage in the life cycle of the deployment of mm-hmm. technology into all these different spaces, you also need to be able to explain the technology. Yes. So level five and just getting in like a refrigerator box yes, and having yeah. nothing to interact or explain. Yeah.
Scary.
Having the humans on board is absolutely critical.
Yeah.
Not just to explain to the users what this thing is doing and answer any questions, but for us to get the feedback of the experience the users are having and how we can improve from that. Are there things we're missing? Is there a better service that could be given? Is there some other nuance of something that we've missed out? And we can always learn. Mm-hmm. So I'm the CTO, right? So technology is always moving. Every day there's something new. Mm-hmm. So every day is something new to learn. Mm-hmm. And the biggest risk is like I become obsolete, outdated, whatever.
Never.
Don't keep up with the trends. But also you have a lot of experience when you get to be, I'm a slightly older guy. I've seen a lot of stuff and you also get to have a really good feeling of what could work, what is worth investing the time and effort in trying out. Mm-hmm. And then you can go down a whole load of blind alleys, down some rabbit holes. And, I have a lot of people working that are like, oh, I tried that and it really didn't work in the end. I'm like, that's still a success.
Yeah.
We now know the limitations of doing that problem in mm-hmm. that way. So it's never a waste.
No,
and you might find that one golden nugget of a solution.
Yeah.
No one else has come across it already. We have a lovely big patent portfolio of IP in this company because we have people going into all these corner cases. We're right there on the cutting edge of deployment, putting stuff in the field and not just in the simulation. Yeah. And because of that, you're meeting people. The people know exactly what their tech, they want it to do. And then we can build it out to make it do what they want it to do. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about some more of the sensors. So we have, this is another laser scanner, a LiDAR sensor. So this is working on the same principle. Mm-hmm. So it's throwing light out from in here. There's a big infrared LED projector light in here. It's throwing lots of pixels of light out of here into a field of view over here. Mm-hmm. So it's limited, it's not spinning. This is a solid state laser mm-hmm. scanner. So it effectively works very similarly to your home cinema system. Mm, okay. In home cinemas, you have like the projector is projecting this using DLP mirrors.
Okay.
So which are like little mirrors that are micro machined and you can put electricity in them and they flip on and off. And that means that you can turn on and off a black and white image. If you have multiple sets of those for different colors and overlay them on the same view, you can then have a color image on your big home cinema screen.
Love it.
So this is using a similar scheme. It's projecting light out, reflecting it off something and looking for the reflection of the light back. So it also gives me a nice infrared view, a black and white view, like an old school TV view. But the density of the points here is a lot closer. So we have a similar amount of power being generated by this guy to illuminate a region, but the points in between, it's not like it's scanning around and I have to wait for the mechanical movement. It goes like flash, 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 flash. And it gives me little snapshots. A bit like strobe, when I was a kid, strobe lighting in the disco. You could do like, I'm here, and then I'm here. That's exactly what this guy kind of gives you as a view of the scene. Okay. Obviously, this is happening fast as well. Some of these are 20 times a second, some are 40 times a second, some are even faster. So these little guys give me a really good dense cloud of information and a quite limited field of view, but these ones are here to look around the sides of our vehicles.
Yes.
So it's quite a big vehicle, this one. So we have several of these along the side. They can find your cyclists on the inner lanes. They can also find all of the other roads, street furniture, the light poles and all the other stuff there.
Yep.
So as we're driving along, we can see that. And as we drive by, we're expecting a light pole. Look, there's a light pole as we went by. Mm-hmm. Tick it off the list. We know where we are still.
Yes.
Right. And then up the top here, we have another camera that has a wider field of view and a bit of a fisheye lens on it. Mm-hmm. So that gives me a lot of information all the way down the side of this vehicle. So we can see if there's anyone in this space. We can see, there's like someone on a scooter who's whizzed up on the inside while we're trying to do maybe a right-hand turn and they've just come up on the inside of us. Mm-hmm. We know they're there now. So we can yield to them, let them move out of the way, give them the space they need. Yeah, so it's all, and that's obviously a different thing. That's just a color camera using some learning to work out what it is you're actually looking at. These are infrared laser scanners. So totally different technologies.
But again, different redundancy in similar spaces.
Yeah, overlapping fields of view.
Exactly.
Two views of the same problem from a different sensor. Yeah. So it's always, that's the key.
It's always covered.
We have another little guy on the front here. This is another one of these laser scanners. But this one is specifically here to cover the side view, but also this has a very high distance. So it can look down the street at an intersection. So the nose of the vehicle is obviously coming into the intersection. This guy gives me a view both ways to know, you know, it's a whatever, a 3-4-way stop. Can I see someone? Mm-hmm. Have they come and have they yielded? I can see with this because it's throwing infrared light out. The infrared light actually lights up the road markings as well. Mm-hmm. So you can see like a black and white view of the road markings. So you can also see, am I in the right place? Have I stopped in the right place? I know I'm in the right place because also there's one of these on the other side that's also looking for some other lines, right? So if you know what you're expecting to see, then all these things can dive together and give you a good confidence. We mm-hmm. move to the front, we have another one of these little laser scanner sensors right on the nose. And this guy is to basically protect the, what we call the drivable space. So the drivable space is like the corridor big enough to fit this van down when you're driving on the street. So what we want to do is we want to predict that our drivable space is clear and there are no threats coming into our drivable space and take appropriate action, of course, if there is. Yeah. So this guy right on the nose, it can see basically straight to the floor in front of this vehicle and it has a nice wide field of view and it covers all the area right in front of us in the area that you as a human would normally be paying attention to. Because right, you've got a pair of eyes in the front of your head. My van has got eyes all around its head and they're using different sensor technologies for its eyes. So it has a 360 view all the time. You're focused on the drivable space actually when you're driving mostly.
Hopefully.
You have mirrors that help you look at the rear space. And when you're on the highway or something, obviously you're like, I need to swap lanes. So you look in your mirror, do your indicator and like move over. This guy already knows there's someone there and there's actually 5-10 cars behind that as well. It knows all of those guys as well.
And don't go.
Exactly. So the drivable space problem is all about having a really good confidence at a high rate that that area is safe to drive into. So if someone comes in, you know, and I don't know, we've been doing testing at X.O, they've got these little dummies. They throw those in only maybe 10 meters in front of us when we're cruising along. We see that threat with this scanner first. And it goes, oh, there's something in our drivable space. Slow down, slow down. So we have two levels of deceleration in this van because it's a regenerative electric van. We can do a cruise down for the regen. But if there's something that's thrown in our space, actually, we can put a full ABS stop on if we want to. And that stops this van quicker than quicker than you human can because there's not the reaction time the human needs. We're controlling the brake system directly without actually having to press, get your foot, put it on the pedal. Yeah. So we save that little, the thinking time is almost instant and the actuator time is almost instant. So our stopping time is better than the human stopping time.
It's
and
incredible.
we're not like distracted, not me.
People
not necessarily distracted when they're driving, but it's quite, for a human, it's quite a dull task driving because most of it is very boring.
Yeah.
And because it's boring, you can kind of lose interest in it. You know, do, you know, 6-hour road trip across the state.
Think about
for
your
you
day.
Guys, that's nothing. For us, it's like, oh goodness, it's taking forever this is really to get here.
So, if I could only just hop in the autonomous vehicle to take me there.
Exactly. So up on top of the roof here, we also have two more wider field of view laser scanners, the two guys on the left and right there. Those guys are wider field of view and they're painting basically an arc from slightly beside the driver door here, all the way across into the center of our drivable space and beyond. And then there's one on the other side that's overlapping. So actually our drivable space here is lit three times by three different scanners.
Yeah.
And then as well in the center here, in the little wedge at the top there, there's a forward facing camera.
So now that we've talked through all of the sensors, and as you mentioned, the ones on this side are the same on this side, let's break down past sensor level of what you can see and what else can move.
Yeah, so obviously this is a van from Ford. The Ford guys already have their own safety systems in these vans to make the NCAP ratings that they need for these. So it already has excellent wheel odometry on this van. So the wheel odometry is telling me how far the wheel has rolled, and it does that at a very high resolution. Obviously, the faster you go, the more little pulses you get because you get like a pulse. It's a bit like, think of like a water wheel. It's got all these paddles on it. If you count the paddles as they go by on the water wheel, if the water's flowing slowly, the paddles going slowly, the paddles going by your field of view are going slowly. But if you imagine you've got like some massive torrent of water and the wheel's like, you can hardly keep up with the, they're just merged together. So our computer system looks at these wheels as they're going around. And because you can see the wheels, you can then measure where you are on the ground. But the problem with just looking at wheels is that you think of our, like our roadways here, you think, oh, you know, you drive along and it's just flat. But it turns out the roads are not flat. So they have a bit of a crown in them so that when the water goes on them, they drain off into the gutters.
Makes sense.
Right? So, but because of that, the vehicle isn't sitting on a nice flat surface. It's actually on a little bit of a lean. You wouldn't really know it when you're in the van, but when you're on a lean and you run for a mile, it turns out that the part of the van that's on the lean, you're actually, you don't feel like it as a human, but you're actually turning the steering wheel slightly uphill to account for the lean.
Yeah.
So you're actually going on a slight curve on this crown of the road, even though you're driving in a straight line. It's hard to appreciate, but you're actually slightly turning.
Yeah.
And because of that, your wheels on the slide side nearer the curb are running slightly faster than the wheels on the other side. You have to know that, and the computer has to know that, but it also has to know the diameter of the wheel. So the wheel diameter is all about how much air you have in the tire and how much load you have in the van.
Okay.
So if you put a lot of air in the tire, it obviously goes to its maximum size and actually comes a bigger diameter. If it's hardly, you know, got any air in it, it's like a flat tire, obviously it's lower on the ground. And when you roll it through the world, it takes many more times to roll through the same space.
So much
if you know the wheel diameter, and you know that because you know roughly the size of the tire, you also need to know the tire pressure. So there's a tire pressure monitoring in here, in this van. We record the tire pressures as we're rolling through the world to make an estimate of the wheel diameters. And then when you know the wheel diameter, you can then calibrate yourself going down a nice flat bit of street. Mm-hmm. We have a whole load of other tech to be able to do that and calibrate on the fly. You can have a really good date reckoning of where you are.
I think we don't give this vehicle as much credit as it is due. I'm learning even more today, even though I've been with the company for years. I always talk about wheel odometry, but I've never got down to the PSI level and really breaking that down. So it's really interesting.
So every problem that you see, there's always something new to see, right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Every day you do stuff is an opportunity to learn.
So we've made our way inside the vehicle and outside of the freezing fall day that we're experiencing. So tell me a little bit about what we're seeing inside.
Yeah, so this is a an e-Transit. We have 8 seats in this Transit van. This was upfitted from a regular cargo Transit van because you can't currently buy a suitable e-Transit. I mean, on spec you can, but you cannot actually go find someone who has one.
I tried.
Yeah. So if you want an e-Transit for passengers, you've got to basically go upfit it yourself. Mm-hmm. So this was turned in from a panel van into a passenger van, windows cut in, all of the correct seating put in, seat belts everywhere, has the tracks in the floor, as you can see. This is so you can like move these seats around, but also you have the tie downs for any wheelchair users and whatever in the back. Mm-hmm. So it's an 8-seater. It has space in the back for that big lift. So the whole lift comes in and you don't have to remove any of the seats. So comfortable place. It's all, you know, climate controlled in here or whatever. So you'll see that it looks kind of like a Transit van, but it has a big backbone in the middle of this. And it also has a couple of screens and it has this big black box. So this big black box is where all of the brains live. So this is where all of the computing infrastructure lives. This is where the AutoStack software is running on this big box in here. Yeah. It's a whole set of embedded controllers as well.
Most important part.
Yeah, exactly. So for this to talk to the van, there's a big cableway and that runs down the trunking on the inside of this backbone to get it into the base. And then under these seats is where it connects into the main vehicle system. So that guy is running all of that stuff and all of the other sensors that you see around the vehicle, all the wiring for those, that obviously we make all that kind of stuff at Aurigo as well. We're an automotive company too. So this is like our bread and butter, upfitting these kind of things. All that cable is running all inside the paneling here. So you see it's a lovely, tidy job. In the front seats here, so the area at the back here is obviously for the passengers. We have 2 crew in this van as we run it here. So we have one guy who's a safety driver. That guy's responsible for being the safety of this van and driving it just like a human driver would, except that they're just pressing what we have here is basically a dead man pedal. And the dead man pedal means that the van will not drive unless you're pressing that pedal down. And that means that at any point in time when you want to be able to run this vehicle autonomously, you have to have someone sitting in the seat and they have to be pressing that pedal and they have to know what to do with that pedal because it's not just a case of just like pressing it down and off you go. So that guy is the responsible driver. So they're also here in Canada, there isn't really a legal framework for autonomous vehicles to run. So if the van had a ticket, it's actually the guy in the driver's seat that would get the ticket. So yes. They are the responsible driver here. So they are sitting in the seat. They're looking around. They're doing exactly what they would as a human driver, except they're not pressing the brake, accelerator, and running the steering wheel or any of the other control, the indicating lights or headlights and stuff. That's all being handled by the auto stack. It's running all that stuff. If the guy here has seen something that they think, oh, I don't know, I need to like take this vehicle and take it off the route and go and plug it in the charger or something, they can absolutely just not be on the dead man pedal, and the thing just drives like a regular e-transit. Mm-hmm. So they can drive it with the brakes and the steering and everything and just drive it on the roadway. No training needed apart from to be a van driver.
Yeah.
So that's the goal here. And then the guy sitting in the other seat is basically the guy that's monitoring the computing system. So rather than having any distraction for the guy that's meant to be driving, we have a second person in this van so that they can monitor all the computer system. They can see the state of health of things. They also act as a second pair of eyes mm-hmm. for the driver. So we have a training that we do where people, when they're driving around, they talk to each other as we're going along. And it's like, is there something from the right at the junction? The computer system says there's nothing coming. The guy here will ask the guy there, is there something coming? They look for themselves, is there something coming? So this whole same philosophy of like multiple sets of eyes looking at multiple sets of information that goes through the whole company into the deployments to make sure that everybody is paying attention.
Yes, and everything is safe and redundant and that we move through, collect data. And then, you know, obviously eventually the idea is to start to remove these drivers, to remove the co-pilots. But right now it's always important, again, for user acceptance and that comfort level. And people are just excited. They want to know about the technology. So, you know, I think having the secondary person, we're very unique in offering that. And it's just a great extra set of eyes, a great look at the autonomous drive system. And then if someone has a question, again, it just kind of pulls that so the focus is not here from the driver.
No, absolutely. And people say, how would you make a profit running a van where you need two people to run it? And I always say, well, we're spending money engineering this system.
Yes.
Building it up so it could be used and put into being able to drive any vehicle anywhere in any location. And the guy that's in that seat is my eyes and ears on exactly how we ought to be engineering these systems, mm-hmm. what those scenarios are, mm-hmm. the capability of the compute system when it's running to be able to effectively learn from the scenarios that are being driven and then feed that back. So the guy here is an engineer.
Yes.
They're not the operator guy, mm-hmm. they're an engineer. So it's a totally different role that guy's playing.
And we are removing these drivers in some of our deployments. So it is an exciting thing that we work through as we trial the vehicle and spend some time on the ground at particular locations.
Exactly. So when you have a confidence that you've driven many, many, many miles in one particular location and you've learned all the scenarios mm-hmm. by being there through a season or whatever, then the learning you're getting from the guy in this seat is actually diminishing. Mm-hmm. And then we use the computing to mine that information and only present to us the new things it's seen. Mm-hmm. So these vehicles are connected. They connect to what we call our auto-connect platform. And that means the data from this vehicle is beamed up through the regular cell phone network, in this case, sent back to our little server farm in the cloud. Mm-hmm. And then from that, we can look through that data, we can index it, we can see what it is that we've seen before and effectively ignore it. And then we can find the new stuff and learn from that. So by doing that, every mile you drive is a useful new piece of information, even if it's only validating the information you already had. So AI and the machine learning, which is sometimes a little bit confused with mm-hmm. AI, is basically ends up fundamentally as a statistical model of what you think is happening. When you're trying to apply that to a vehicle, the scene the vehicle is looking at is extremely rich in content. And because of that, the statistical process that has to happen is a very complex and it needs a lot of training data to be able to get a very high confidence that system is working. And it also means that if you give those systems something they've never seen before, they have a certain statistical capability of knowing what's going on, but there's always an error bound, right? There's always a, I think it's that, I don't absolutely know it's that, right? So it's not a logic process that's running here, it's a statistical process. It's an estimation mm-hmm. of what's going on. And the more stuff you give it and the bigger brain you have, the more you can get your estimation to be a better estimation. So for the main driving systems we have on this vehicle, we don't use AI to do the actual driving task. Mm-hmm. We use logic and we use physics and we use models of physical properties and we use a whole load of calculations, but we don't use an AI to decide what path to run. So, and because of that, I can tell exactly what line of software is making a decision, and I can prove that in all of these different scenarios that you can run in it, that decision is always good, and you can bound it by a certain limit of saying, you know, I don't know, there's a dog running out in front of me right now. If it's within 3 meters, we can't stop in 3 meters at this speed. So try your best to stop, but stopping is not going to be possible. And other actions like a massive swerve or something are not the right decision at that point. This is a bit like the old trolley problem. If you give that kind of logic solver another scenario, you can prove that it can make the right decisions in all cases, in all simulations. There's a safety implication of using AI. And at some point, there are some excellent technologies coming out this is a very known, well-known problem I'm explaining here. But right now, at this minute, the affordability of safe compute is in the logic solver space that we're using, and for my opinion currently the AI is not quite there to be as explainable as it ought to be to put the thing directly on the road as the primary driving path planning. Absolutely.
Thanks for breaking it down. So I would say every episode I like to ask an off the wall question on, you know, what in particular would you like to see autonomous in this world that you haven't seen so far?
Wow. Now that is a really good question, because there are most things that if you throw enough time and money at, you could automate. There are many things that it's not worth, in my opinion, automating. So I can tell you something, for instance, that I didn't like being automated.
Oh, I love this.
So
this
how about that?
Take.
A different spin,
love
right?
It.
So I was in a place in Singapore and I ordered my food on an app. Because it's like COVID hangover. It's obviously less money for the restaurant. They don't have to take your order. And it's always right because you put it in the thing. Ordered my food. And then a little wheelie robot came out with a tray on top with my food on it. And then it delivered it to me. And I was like, this is a really lovely looking plate of food. But the robot just like wheeled itself away. I had no human interaction to say like to the server. It was like, that's a really lovely looking dish.
Yeah.
Please tell the chef. I thought that was a really lovely thing. It tastes great. It looked great. I lost any of the human emotion that went with the food and the meal.
Yeah.
And because of that, I felt a little let down.
A little gypped.
And there were people like, oh, these robots are cool. And I like the human bit.
Yeah.
So I think there are places for autonomy and there are places that we want to keep old school and the personal and the interaction. Yeah.
You need to keep it.
It's not going to... One size does not fit all.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Just because we can doesn't mean we need to.
Absolutely.
Okay, you heard it here first. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this podcast today. I think we really got to dive into what makes our auto shuttle work, and then, of course, our auto stack and what that looks like across our other vehicle suite. We have a lot of exciting things here at Aurigo, so, of course, stay tuned for the next episode where we dive in deeper to the latest and greatest technology moving our company forward.